From Paris to Portland, you've picked up the guidebooks. You've followed the advice. This is the Fromer Travel Show. Pauline Fromer, president of Fromer Media, and Jason Cochran, editor-in-chief of Fromers.com, with the most complete, the most up-to-date travel information available anywhere. The pages of the Fromer's guidebooks come alive right now, exclusively on 77 WABC.
And a happy royal wedding day to you all. I'm Pauline Fromer.
And I'm Jason Cochran.
And as you heard, you're listening to The Travel Show, and it seemed only appropriate, based on the momentous events that we all woke up early to watch this morning, or at least I did, that we should talk about the British Isles. And it's doubly appropriate because, Jason, where are you right now?
Well, I did not have to get up so early in the morning because the wedding was at noon. I'm in London right now. The wedding, of course, is in Windsor, just a few miles west of here. And so I'm sort of exulting in all of the celebrations and decorations happening all around me.
Well, we want to hear more about that in a moment. But let's get the question of the day out there for all our listeners. We're going to talk about the United Kingdom, the British Isles. What is your favorite experience that you have had in the British Isles? Or where do you dream of going if you haven't been there? Give us a call. 800-848-WABC is our number, I'm proud to say. That translates to 800-848-9222. The question of the day is the British Isles. Well, give our listeners some hints, some ideas, if they want to go see some of the places they saw on TV today and have seen on TV over the years in the British Isles. Where should they go? What should they do? What's really exciting? If you don't want to talk about British Isles, that's okay, too. We want to talk to all travelers. So once again, our number is 800-848-9222. And Jason, what would you say? Can you even pick a favorite in the British Isles?
I don't think I'll say favorite, but I will talk about a couple of the things that I did this week, and maybe it will spur some of our listeners to talk about their own adventures. And by the way, just for the record, if you have something to talk about that's not about the British Isles, totally great. We love answering any and all questions. This is just to get the conversation going.
Right.
But earlier this week, I'm going to name a couple places that I went. I rented a car, which is a crazy idea for some people when you think that they drive on the left here in the UK. But for some reason, I find it really not that difficult to just my brain flips and suddenly
really?
I'm on the left and
Ooh.
It works. But
I have to think every second when I drive on the other side of the road. It freaks me out.
Well, you know,
I do
the worst
it,
part for
me
was
out.
Roundabouts. Roundabouts,
yeah.
You know, instead of stoplights. But what I did, and anyone can do this, I went on YouTube before flying, and I just to get a little refresher on how to do a roundabout, and just if you're wondering what the two secrets of roundabouts are, one is if there's someone coming from the right, you let them go. They always give way to whoever's coming from the right. This is, of course, on a left-hand drive, in a left-hand drive country. The other one is look on the lane. They always paint on the lane which lane goes to which exit. So you'll know I need to be on the A33. So there's lane A33, and then you follow it. And if you can do those two things, you'll be fine. But so I did this over and over and over again, dozens of times, because there were no stoplights across the countryside. And I went to this wonderful town called Port Isaac.
Huh.
It's in Cornwall. Have you ever heard of Port Isaac?
I have never heard of Port Isaac.
Are you – you may not – I don't know if you're a big PBS fan, but there's a show that they show on PBS. It's a British show called Doc Martin.
Hmm.
You might have heard of it anyway. It's
I've
about
heard
a,
of the shoe.
A city doctor who goes to the countryside. He goes to a little port town, as a matter of fact.
Huh.
And for eight seasons, they've filmed Doc Martin in this adorable little port town. And this is the kind of place where you have to sort of aim your car down one-lane roads for a few miles through the hedge until you finally – the town opens up, and there couldn't be more than three dozen little buildings, all dating from the 1600s and 1700s, up and down the cliffs with this port right in the middle. People out playing, enjoying the sunshine, golden retrievers splashing in the water, pubs. And Cornwall has these beautiful green cliffs and the sea roiling outside. It's such a beautiful place to be.
What,
and so I spent a little time in Port Isaac, you know, eating food, drinking beer, taking pictures. I've never seen this show, but I was with my mother, and she's a big fan.
So is that the main reason people go there is to yeah. see this TV show play? So there's
The old days.
Yeah.
No, there's no like museums or major attractions. In the old days, Port Isaac was just this little secret you went to get away from it all. But 8 years ago, when the TV show started, people started arriving during the daytime in buses. And I don't know how they get the buses in.
Wow.
But so there were a fair number of tourists in Port Isaac. But it didn't ruin it because they all sort of left at 3 o'clock or so and leaving you to your own devices in the pub. The pub is one of these slouching, you know, places with a wooden floor, you know, and a gossipy person behind the bar.
Is there only one in town?
There are a few places to go, but there's one main pub. Yeah. Huh. And there's another old town right next to Port Isaac. You just go over a little hill and there's literally probably 10 buildings in it. It's called Port Gavern. And it used to be, I think, some sort of a mining village right there on the sea. And that's where I spent my nights, even further away in a smaller town even than Port Isaac. They couldn't count the number of stars in the sky. It was the coziest feeling being in the pub of that hotel. You know, at nighttime, you know, everything is pitch black outside and you hear this Cornwall Sea. It was a beautiful way to spend some time.
Well, let me ask you some nitty gritty questions. How expensive is it to do this as compared to, say, seeing London, to go out into the countryside into a rather obscure place like this? And there's probably not that many hotels. Does that drive up prices or make them cheap?
They're still cheaper than London. London is a very expensive place. You can still get a hotel between 100 and 200 pounds. And that's about a pound is about $1.35 right now. So you can, for $200 a night or so, you can do. And, you know, a beer will be about 4 pounds, gives you an idea. So that's about $6, which frankly is not much different from a New York price.
No, that's not bad.
So it's sort of similar. The trick with Port Isaac especially is that it's not on a train line. I'm used to going to places on trains in the UK. They go everywhere you need to go. So this is a place where you really kind of have to have a car. That's the expensive part.
Right.
Renting a car is not cheap. In the UK, most of your cheapest models will be manual, stick shift.
Yeah.
Again, because you're now driving on the right part of the car, you're using your left hand to stick, you know, for the manual. And not everyone takes to that as easily as I take to driving on the left. That takes a little more practice.
Did you drive with a manual?
We upgraded for two reasons, to an automatic, so I could know I could take off at a roundabout when I needed to.
Yeah.
And we upgraded also for the GPS.
Ah.
It's very hard to find a paper map anymore. So if you want to make a road trip and you want to follow which little road you need to take across the countryside, the rental car companies barely offer them anymore. Well, they figure everyone has a GPS.
On your cell phone. That's what they're looking for.
But if you're a traveler, your GPS might be throttled. You may not have full data speeds when you travel because we're roaming. So you can't really use your phone GPS when you travel. That's a little catch that no one thinks about until it's too late. So if you are renting a car anywhere in the UK or Europe and you want to have a GPS, don't rely on your phone. Make sure you rent the tablet GPS from them or the car with the GPS in the console. It'll make your life – it's more expensive, but it makes your life so much easier. And we're going to get the number out for one more time for people who are listening. It's 800-848-9222. We're talking about the British Isles and our favorite experiences. But if you have more to talk about than that, any question you have at all about travel, give us a call. We can talk about that. 800-848-9222.
So you went
to – pulling the other place.
Yeah,
I went.
I was going to ask you that.
I mentioned a number of places. Nearby these two towns is the place where King Arthur was said – to have been conceived in a magical fashion in the middle and in the last millennium.
Conceived? I thought you were going to say pulled the sword out of the stone.
No, that's I don't know where that happened, but this is the area where he's said to be from. And his legend was already so big 800 years ago, that kings would build castles in this place just to have some of the magic of King Arthur rub off on them.
Wow.
And then they would be associated with the rock that he lived on. And when I say rock, it's this thing that juts out into the sea, again, that roiling Cornwall Sea. It's called Tintagel. And if you've ever read the Mary Stuart books about King Arthur and when they were popular for many years, you know all about Tintagel and all the things that happened there. But it's now a ruin. There's a lot of castle ruins from these kings who moved in and out. There's Dark Ages ruins from the late triple numbered years with people who used to trade with the Romans. So they keep finding Roman pottery and amphorae from the Mediterranean. It was a misty, beautiful place that really you could really get a sense that King Arthur had, had his origins there.
Well, I see we have a question coming in from Larry in Brooklyn. Larry called 800-848-9222. You can too, but let's talk to Larry first. Hey, Larry, thanks for calling.
Hi. My whole life, I've always dreamed of going to England, and what I really want to know is, for a beginner like myself, what would be the best plan? Where would I go first? And
how long would you have for your trip, do you think?
No, let's say 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Now, yeah, should I stay at a place, go on a tour that'll show me the whole country, or what do you recommend?
What do you recommend, Jason? You're the England expert.
I'd like to...
I always tell people to land in London simply because there are so many flights going there. You're more likely to get a deal. And also because London is, of course, the capital and the most populous city. And so there's so many trains that go all over the country from there. You can get basically anywhere you want to go from London. And you must take a train. I don't recommend renting a car on your first trip in England unless there's a very specific remote place you have in mind you want to visit. But the trains go to any city and any major town of any size.
But before
you can hop
we leave,
on, they go many times a day too.
Before we leave London, you should spend, if you've never been before, at least 4 nights in London. London
at
is
least.
An extraordinary city with so
and
much
don't
to
forget,
see and do.
You can jump out to Oxford or Stratford-on-Avon or Cambridge or Canterbury or Stonehenge or Bath. They're all within a day trip of London. You can actually stay in London, go out and see them for, you know, half the day and then come back to town on the train. They're
so
all close by.
Is that what you would recommend for 2 weeks, or would you recommend that he do London, maybe a couple of days of day trips from there, and then base himself somewhere else for the second week?
If he's an outdoorsy type person, the north, there has a lot of hiking, beautiful low mountains, especially in the Lake District. Some of the most beautiful parts of Europe.
The Lake District is extraordinary.
If he likes that kind of thing. But also, I would even leave England, meaning going to Scotland. You don't need a passport any different from, you know, you've already entered the country. So you just take a train for 4 or 5 hours from London. You're in the middle of Edinburgh, which is a totally different feel. Scotland was and is a different country.
Yeah.
It is now part of the United Kingdom. But they have their own heritage, their own architecture, their own language. There's a Gaelic that they speak in Scotland, and you'll have some television channels. They're still speaking Scottish Gaelic. So I would not neglect Edinburgh if I were also coming to do the UK for the first time.
Larry,
but that's a pretty good run. 5 or 6 days in London, 2 or 3 days in Edinburgh, and then 1 or 2 days maybe in the countryside somewhere.
So, yeah. So, Larry, I think we're telling you not a tour. Do it on your own. They speak English. It's easy to get around. The train system there is extraordinarily easy to navigate. You can do it with a good guidebook on hand. I can tell you of a good guidebook. Jason wrote one to London. It's spectacular, called Fromer's Easy Guide to London. He's in London right now because he's updating it. We have to take a break. I hope that helped, Larry. If anybody else would like to call us, our number is 800-848-9222. We'll be talking more about the UK, more about travel. It's up to you what we talk about, so give us a call, and we'll be right back.
Get a jump on vacation plans. The Fromer Travel Show. Pauline Fromer and Jason Cochran. 77 WABC.
This program is brought to you by Allianz Travel Insurance. Protect your travel investment with Allianz. Visit Allianz travelinsurance.com. And let's get back to the phones. Once again, our number is 800-848-9222. We have Jean on the line from Bridgeport, Connecticut. Jean, thank you so much for your patience. Good to talk with you.
Oh, same here. I love listening to your show every week. I thought this was a short story worth telling. I was in London in 1991 visiting a French cousin of mine who was a war bride and became British. And I took the everybody.
There's a story there, too, it sounds.
Everybody lives on the outskirts, you know. So I took the train from where they lived. And I got into London by myself. I did it every day while I was there, just taking in the sights. And on this particular day, I decided to go to Westminster Abbey. I remember there was a scaffolding at the time. And I just walked in, wandering around by myself. I wasn't on any tour or anything.
Uh-huh.
And I went down. I remember walking down, and I'm just wandering around. But the point to this story is that when I came home, I saw a documentary on Westminster Abbey on uh-huh. Connecticut Public TV, and I had no idea that I was walking around these famous graves.
Oh, yes.
Of the English, you know, English history, kings, queens. I think Dickens is buried there. So I said, oh, my God. I had no idea I was walking around these famous people's graves. So,
you were walking on top of them. It's, you know, some of the kings and queens have their own chapels. They're underneath effigies. But certainly, you know, you were walking on top of Charles Darwin and Isaac Newton. And, you know, Stephen Hawking is there now, too. So you can go back.
And go back with Jason's book. Jason gives a beautiful description of everything you should see and notice there. And it really is such a rich place. Every inch of it has history.
Yeah.
And it's a great time of year to go because they're opening up a brand new section. They're opening up, well, it's not a new section, but it's an attic above the whole sanctuary that's been closed for 700 or 800 years.
Wow.
It's called the Triforium. At one time you could only get up by a very windy staircase that was too small. So they've built a separate elevator tower that connects to Westminster Abbey. This opens on June 11th. And for the very first time, you can now walk all around the wooden floors, far above the sanctuary, and you can look at lots of different exhibitions. That's where they've moved the museum, including, and this again starts this summer permanently, including the clothing that all the kings and queens' effigies once wore.
Wow.
Whenever a king or queen died, there was an effigy held up in front of their funeral train through town so that people could see, who, of course, what the king or queen had looked like, they might not have known, in their clothes. And the actual clothes have been kept all these years. We're talking as far back as Elizabeth I and further back. Mm-hmm. And they're all going to be on display in this museum, along with a number of other great precious artifacts from Westminster Abbey's history. So if her story is interesting to you, and it's interesting to me, Jean and I would both tell you to go to Westminster Abbey and try the new Triforium this year.
It's a fascinating place. I'm so glad I saw it. And I thought, like I said, this was a story to be told that I had no idea. I'm walking amongst all these.
Oh my goodness! That reminds me of
history, and I didn't know. I was by myself. I'm walking around.
Well,
I didn't find out until I came home.
You need to carry a guidebook.
A guidebook.
If you watch the wedding this morning, that chapel is where kings and queens are buried now. Westminster Abbey is full, so the queen herself will be interred in St. Stephen's Chapel. Her parents are, her sister is. That is now the burial place in Windsor for the current line of monarchs.
Thank you for calling, Jean. All right, let's move on to Michelle. Michelle is calling from Woodbury, New York. And Michelle, you've been waiting a long time, so we thank you. What's on your mind?
This summer in August, my extended family and I will be traveling on a 12-day cruise with Princess to the British Isles. We'll be traveling with children who are age 7 to 11 also, so keep that in mind. And I was wondering if you could give me some insight on Guernsey, as well as 2 days in Dublin and 2 days in Glasgow, Scotland.
Well, if you're 2 days, I would say if you can, for one of those days, get out of Dublin. Just about an hour out of the city is this area called County Wicklow, which is absolutely beautiful. And going into the Irish countryside, I think, is the highlight of Ireland. But there'll be hiking paths for you and the kids. There will be historic sites. So on one of the Dublin days, definitely go to County Wicklow. There are also some... am I wrong about this? Are there some, Jason, are there some Harry Potter sites in Dublin? Is there,
I don't think so. Most of them are in the UK.
So what would you say? You're more of an expert in the UK than I am.
I'd say for Glasgow, which I think was one of the places that you mentioned, don't forget it's very close to Edinburgh. So you can actually get two cities for the price of one by jumping on a commuter train, which takes about 40 minutes. And Edinburgh, there's not so much for kids in Glasgow. There's a lot of old museums and things like that. But in Edinburgh, I would take one of the underground tours. The Edinburgh is the center of it was built on top of an old extinct volcano, but it's an old mountain. And successive years, they kept building on top of the old buildings so that deep down in the levels underneath now, you'll find dusty tunnels with old doors from the 1700s. And kids love those because they're so little creepy. But they do regular tours, so it's not dangerous. But and it kind of will capture your imagination. That's a great thing to do with kids.
Wow. And what about Guernsey?
Guernsey's not a place I've been. That's a smaller place. It's an island.
You'll have
to call us back and tell us what you did.
Yeah, you've stumped us, but I'm hoping on Guernsey, but I'm hoping one of our listeners has been and can give Michelle the lowdown. So 800-848-9222 is the number to call about Guernsey. Thank you for calling, Michelle. Let's turn next to Andrea. Andrea is calling from Manhattan. Hey, Andrea, nice to speak with you.
Nice to speak with you as well. And my husband Glenn and I are going to be in Edinburgh in June, and we are looking to do maybe a day trip outside of the city to do some hiking and seeing the countryside.
Well, you know what I would suggest? Go on the internet and find out if while you're there, there will be any Highland festivals going on. And I would plan your day trip around that, because these are these wonderful festivals with dancing, with competitions, with outdoor food, and they're always in beautiful areas. And that could really make your trip. I don't know offhand which Highland festivals will be going on, but that would be my advice. Jason, do you have differing advice on that?
That's good advice. The Highlands are a little farther away from Edinburgh than they are from Glasgow, partly because the train lines sort of go in weird directions. But there are many, many day trip tours on offer, and your hotel will know all about it. One of them, I think, is called Timberbush, and it goes up to Glenshiel in the Highlands. There are very long day trips. You can go all the way to Loch Ness, but it will be a very full day. You can go to the lower Highlands when you're near Edinburgh. Some people go golfing because, of course, St. Andrews, and that was the origination of the golfing tradition, was around that part of the world. Some people keep it closer to town. They go to the Rosslyn Chapel, this beautiful old chapel, which figured people remember very prominently in the Da Vinci Code. And my favorite thing to do, that's just the town over from Edinburgh, is the Britannia, which was the Queen's yacht for about 50, 40 years. She went all around the world in this thing, and it was pulled up to the dock and opened unchanged as a museum. It's pretty fascinating, too.
So I hope that helps, Andrea. We have to take another break, but before we do, let me give a shout-out to our sponsor, Allianz Travel Insurance. They have your back when things go wrong. So what can go wrong on vacation? Well, you could lose your luggage. Your plane could be delayed. You could get really, really sick somewhere exotic, have to be medevaced out, and spend tens of thousands of dollars on that helicopter flight. None of that stuff should happen, but it does. So, to be safe when you travel, look to a company like Allianz. They will cover you. To learn all about their policies, visit allianztravelinsurance.com. That's allianztravelinsurance.com.
The most popular destinations for you and your family, right here. Pauline Frommer and Jason Cochran, The Frommer Travel Show, 77 WABC.
This week's program is brought to you by Allianz Travel Insurance. Protect your travel investment from unexpected problems with Allianz. Visit allianztravelinsurance.com. And let us get back to the phones. Once again, our number, 800-848-9222. Please don't be shy. Let's talk to Frank in East Williston, New York. Hey, Frank, you are on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
As far as England goes, I absolutely loved going to Liverpool and taking the Beatle tour in Liverpool by the cabbies that took you around. That was a fantastic trip. Spent like 4 hours with a cabbie taking us to all the magic spots.
Oh, how great. How terrific.
Yes, that was fabulous. And this summer, driving out west, and I was wondering if you can think of a spot in northern Montana besides Glacier, where we're going to end up in Glacier National Park, that we should try to hit as we're driving out on the northern part of Montana.
Well, Bozeman is a lot of fun. It's kind of a hip, cool, former Wild West town that's now a little gentrified, but that's a very cool place to cool your heels a little bit. Obviously, when you go to Montana, you want to see the outdoors, and there are a lot of great dude ranches in that part of the world where you could spend a couple of nights and have a city slickers-like experience. Some of them allow you to rope cattle. Some of them, it's a little bit easier. You're just going out on the trails. But there's a very good website that tells you about dude ranches all over the United States. And I'm blanking on its name. but if you keep listening, I will make sure to look it up in the break and I'll announce it. Jason, do you have any other thoughts on Montana?
I'd also suggest that, you know, the border to Canada is right there. And Banff National Park, famous Banff and Jasper, two of the most beautiful national parks right next to each other in all of North America, let alone Canada. They're not far from northern Montana, so you might also consider looking at those. Yeah, right. They're not too hard to get to.
I hope that helps, Frank. Thank you so much for calling. Let's turn next to David in Forest Hills. Hey, David, you are live on the air, and I understand you called us before.
Yes, I called you about 3 weeks ago. I was taking a trip to Tokyo, Hong Kong, and China, and you gave me some pointers, and I want to thank you, but mostly I use your book, Easy Guide to Hong Kong, and it helped me enormously.
Oh, good.
And the suggestions you gave me in Tokyo were great, even though I only had a couple of days there. Instead of changing planes in Tokyo back from Hong Kong, I decided to stay there for 3 days. And I really enjoyed the whole trip, except for the fact that everything in Hong Kong, everything in China, and everything in Tokyo are shopping malls.
That's very true.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
I took a tram up to the top of the mountain to overlook Hong Kong Harbor, which I was expecting to be a beautiful panoramic view, and it was. But you get up to the top of the mountain, and there's a mall. And then you go down, and you go to the train station, and it's a mall. And there are huge, huge malls. There's nothing but malls there. And I didn't go there to go shopping. I didn't buy a thing, but...
Yeah. You do find, it's a shopping-centric part of the world. That's a major pastime for them. But there's other things to see and do.
When it's very humid and hot, which it can be in that part of the world, you become very thankful that those indoor spaces exist. You go in, you don't spend a thing, but boy, are you glad for the AC sometimes.
Yeah. Well, thank you for calling back, David. I'm so glad that the Frommer's Easy Guide worked for you, and welcome home. We have to take another break. Let me remind everybody, we've got about 20 minutes left in the show. That's more than enough time to talk to you all. We'd love to do that. Our number is 800-848-WABC. That's also 800-848-9222. So
this is the Frommer Travel Show. Inspiring locations, inspiring ideas for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
You are listening to the Frommer Travel Show. I'm Pauline Frommer here with Jason Cochran. We're taking your calls at 800-848-9222. So let's move back to the phones and talk with Julie in Fairfield, New Jersey. Hey, Julie, you are live on the Travel Show. Welcome.
Hi, good afternoon. My son and four of his friends are going to be in Krakow for Krakow, Poland, for 5 days next week. I'm just wondering, is there anything exciting or new to do over there? Can you make any recommendations for 5 25-year-olds?
Wow.
I have something to suggestion for that. You know, Krakow is one of the few Eastern Europe cities that has an English language, like kind of like a newsletter events website available in English. So you can actually look and see what's going on specifically next week. We're talking concerts, events, and, you know, art showings. It's KrakowPost.com, Krakow with a K. So give that a shot because they'll have a real up-to-the-minute listing of what's going to be happening next week.
And have they been to Krakow before? Is that why you're asking about new things?
A couple of them have been, but when they were younger. So I'm just wondering. They're in their mid-20s now.
Well, I mean, if they're in their mid-20s, it's quite the party city. The two hottest areas are Kazimierz, which was named after that king. It's the old Jewish quarter, but a lot of the old cellars and pub areas have been turned into cocktail bars and writhing dance floors. I mean, it's quite a night spot. I think they may end up not seeing much of daylight if they go that way and see all that's new to see and do there. In terms of daytime attractions, Krakow's big attraction is its history. So you either go way into the past and learn about why Krakow became a world capital, and that's because of its salt mine, and you tour that. That's fascinating. Then you tour the castle. Then you see the historic museums. Then you go a little bit further into the future and learn about the Jewish quarter, gorgeous synagogues there. I mean, there's so much to see and do. It's really a place that it's hard to see every single thing. And they have the best strawberry ice cream on the planet. That may sound odd, but it tastes like fresh strawberries. So make sure that they get some strawberry ice cream while they're there. I hope that helps, Julie. Thank you for calling. Let's turn to Anne in Westchester. Hey, Anne, thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I'm calling with a question about traveling to Vietnam in June. Have 10 days and will be in Hanoi, and then I'm interested in going to Ha Long Bay. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about arrangements or any thoughts on some of the excursions to the different islands on some of those boats in Ha Long Bay.
Right. Well, I've always heard very good things about a company called Swan Cruises. They apparently have very good staff. They take you to some of the most gorgeous parts of the bay, and everybody, I haven't been, but they say it's breathtaking. And they seem to run a tight operation. Jason, do you have any suggestions on this one?
No, but I'm eager to hear what she learns when she comes back.
Yeah. Okay. Once again, you've stumped us, but this is another chance for our listeners. Sometimes we get we take questions that we might have to fudge a little in the hope that our listeners will do better than we do. 800-848-9222. Help Anne. She's going to Vietnam.
And any thoughts? I don't know if Hoi An or Sham Islands.
In terms of what?
I had been hearing it may be worth time to spend a day on the Sham Islands or consider an overnight.
Yes, from what I know, unfortunately, I haven't been, so my knowledge is secondhand. I know a lot of people who have gone to Hoi An and actually gotten complete sets of clothing made. That's another activity there. If you have like a beautiful dress that's kind of getting a little old, you can actually bring it and they will copy it in a fabric that you purchase on site. Or
you might need about 2 days for that, though, maybe not overnight.
Yeah, yeah. But it's pretty quick. It doesn't take more than 2 days.
Yeah.
But
they're fast.
Yeah, they're absolutely fast. I'm sorry we're not being more helpful, Anne, but we thank you so much for calling. You know, I'm looking at the clock. We have to take another break. But to those who'd like to call us, 800-848-9222 is our number, and we will be right back.
Pauline Frommer, Jason Cochran, The Frommer Travel Show. Only here, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
This week's program is brought to you by Allianz Travel Insurance. You want to protect your travel investment with Allianz. And Allianz is now partnering with Frommer's to do something pretty nice for its customers. Not only will they have your back should anything go wrong, but they are providing you with Frommer's information on how to build the best itinerary, how to find the best sites in 24 or so destinations, top destinations around the world. So learn more about all that Allianz can offer at AllianzTravelInsurance.com. That's AllianzTravelInsurance.com. And I see that we have another phone call coming in. We have Anne calling from Long Island. Hey, Anne, nice to speak with you. Thanks for calling.
Oh my gosh, that was very quick.
That was quick. You were the only one on the hold.
My luck. Maybe I'll play the lottery today. Do you know anything about renting houseboats in France? I've seen, you know, on travel shows where people, they can rent houseboats. They go slowly up a river. They can get off, ride bikes, sightsee, go to different towns.
Yeah, it's a great thing to do. There's a couple of ways you can do it. You can either rent it all by yourself, and when that happens, they actually give you full lessons on how to drive it. Apparently, it's not that hard. Some people still get a little nervous, and so they will rent it with a staff, usually with somebody on board to cook and to drive. The second option is much more expensive, though. And from what I understand, it's not that difficult to do.
Right.
I meet these people at the New York Times travel show every year. There are probably about half a dozen companies that do it. And one of the great things about it is it's kind of almost like walking from place to place. That's how slow these boats go. They go very, very slowly down the river. So it's incredibly relaxing. There's many places where you can park the boat, go off to see a winery, go off to hear something else, you know, to go off to see a historic site. Jason, do you have anything to add here?
No, I think you covered it pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds wonderful. I did read about France Afloat. That was one of the companies, but I guess there's a whole bunch of different companies.
There are a bunch of companies. I wish I could...
But you've never done it. Have you ever done it yourself?
I have not done it yet, but...
Well, I'll call back.
No, but it's a common thing, and actually I was just helping with the edits for our France book, and we have a whole section in our upcoming book on this, and it's highly recommended, highly
Thank
recommended.
Thank you so much. Thank
sure.
you. That was great.
Thank you.
Nice talking to you.
You too. Bye-bye. So, Jason, where else did you go in London? You had a couple more adventures, right?
Well, I was not. This is not in London. I was in a city called Bristol, which is kind of in between London and the Port Isaac, which I was talking about before. Bristol has in it, on its river, one of the most important survivors in the history of the development of travel. And this is called the SS Great Britain. It's a ship that was launched in 1843 and is still with us. Now, what was amazing about this ship back in the day is it was the first ocean-going vessel to be made of iron. Before that, they were all made of wood, and of course, they were slower and less reliable. No one thought the iron would float, but it did. And it was also one of the first vessels, ocean-going vessels, to use a propeller, because before that, they used side paddles, which I mean, if you rocked, then it would come up and out of the water. It would go back in. It was not very efficient. The brilliant engineer who decided this should be done, his name was Isambard Kingdom Brunel. He's very famous in the UK for being a designer of train lines, of Paddington Station, of major bridges. But this was considered one of his crowning achievements. Prince Albert, in Victoria and Albert, came out to the launch. It traveled the world probably 36 times around the world, went back and forth Liverpool, New York to Australia and back in 56 days. Travel had never been so quick, so easy, so affordable. It was the largest passenger ship at the time, and you can tour it. It's a fantastic tour. They set it up in the dock as if it's about to leave again with things piled up, you know, crates piled up, and there's also a separate museum just about Brunel and all the incredible things he's done that's just opened. So it's Bristol is only about 2 hours from London by train. Strongly recommended. The SS Great Britain. It's kind of incredible that it still exists. In fact, for a while, it was sunken, half sunken, in the Falkland Islands when it had outlived its usefulness. And it was raised and repaired and restored. And it's still with us. It's so cool.
And I understand you also went to Highclere Abbey.
Highclere Castle.
Oh, Highclere Castle.
But you're halfway there because this is the place, Downton Abbey. Not only was set, it was where it was filmed. If you watch another PBS show, if you watch this show, in the interiors, many of them were shot inside Highclere Castle. Highclere Castle is the seat of the Earl of Carnarvon. He's now the 8th Earl, but I think it was maybe the 3rd or 4th who built it. There's been a building there since before the year 1000, but this one has Elizabethan roots, and now the outside was built also like the Great Britain in 1843,
so just to
what
clarify,
you see on the show.
So but wait, people hold still on. Live to, there. To clarify, just so everybody understands, because I'm not sure it's clear, you went to the place where Downton Abbey is filmed, that beautiful
pat
with the crenellated top.
Wow. Yep. It's a Victorian exterior designed by the same person who did Houses of Parliament here. It's only open 60 days a year, so you have to catch it just right. It's near the town of Newbury, which is also on the train. You can take a taxi from Newbury. I took a car. And you can tour it. You're not allowed to take pictures inside, but it is exactly the way it was on TV. They even sat on the same sofas and had their scenes. It is a beautiful building, absolutely glorious, and in the countryside that you just can't believe. So if you've ever wanted to go to the real Downton Abbey, you can. It's called Highclere Castle. Again, the Earl still lives there. So they sometimes will pop in and watch the tourists go in and out of their home. But I think that's why they don't allow photographs. On one table, I saw a photo of the Earl and his wife with Poppy Bush and Barbara Bush. It was a personal photo. So, you know, they're very well-connected people.
Right. Well, was it hard to get the tickets? Did you have to do it as part of a larger tour? Or can you do it on
most
your own?
Most people do it with a larger tour. They'll take a cruise that will take get off a port and then take a bus up to it. And they get it as part of a package. But it is absolutely possible to buy it independently, which we did. Actually, I've been twice, both times independently. You just look on the calendar on its website ahead of time. You say, that day is available. I'll go. You book a time. And then you show up. It's great. It was so much fun. And if you're a fan of the show, even if you're not a fan of the show, because it's such a beautiful building, it's incredibly transporting to see, you know, just how gloriously that tiny 1% of the landed gentry has lived in the UK. Hmm. It makes, you know, in terms of what you're watching today on the TV, you realize it's a whole other world.
Well, talking about what we saw today on the TV, getting back to the royal wedding, you were in London for the royal wedding. Did it turn obviously it wasn't taking place in London. It was outside of London in Windsor. But did it turn London upside down? Were people gathered around sets everywhere? Or how did people do it?
The hotels are full, mostly of Americans. There are people gathered at pubs. There are people – I was earlier at the Savoy Hotel where they set up several – meeting rooms with screens, and you could sit and you could have champagne and watch the wedding.
Was everybody wearing fascinators? Were you?
There was one woman in a fascinator.
Yes.
It was funny. A lot of the women were glued to it, taking pictures of the sets. Their husbands would get up and down, bored, going to the bathroom.
Right.
It was very funny. But also interesting, when they played God Save the Queen during the ceremony, uh-huh, all the Brits stood up and waited for that to finish before sitting back
in
down
front
again.
Of the
and
TV
this is just watching a
wow.
screening.
Isn't that amazing?
So it was pretty spectacular. And on the streets like Regent Street and Strand, they're hung with those Union Jack flags, hundreds of them. But your average Brit doesn't really care. It just seems like people are just a little over the monarchy in general. So they're not upset about it, but it's just one more thing for them. They're not as excited as the Americans are. But
really?
It's still an event for many people here.
Well, on Fromers.com, you have an article up, really a slideshow with photos, if I'm remembering correctly, on how to see Windsor. Am I right about that?
I have one about Queen Elizabeth's London.
Oh, Queen Elizabeth's London.
Which is on the homepage right now. You can tour the parts of London that are very important to the royals, including St. Stephen's Chapel, where the wedding was today. That's in Windsor, which is just about a half an hour west of the city by train. But the trains are packed. They're running extra trains because most of the people are staying in London. There's not a lot of places to stay in Windsor.
But somebody who watched it on TV today and wants to go to Windsor maybe in a month or two, they may be able to tour it, right? It depends on whether
the family
is there.
You can tour it every single day. Yeah, except the royal wedding closed it down. But yeah, it's open every day. And there's a write-up in it in our London book in the day trip section. Windsor Castle is open year-round. In fact, they have a changing of the guard out there, too, if you want to watch that.
Very cool. Well, it's been a delight talking with you across the pond. We thank you so much for listening. And to those who are traveling, may we wish you a hearty bon voyage.
Bon voyage.